Can we have the update on the...
I'm going to just let me bring the public in.
I just motioned to come in.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are you going to do that first right away?
Yes.
And then, Adelaide, I've got to go, but I want to just give you a couple of things.
Okay.
But I'm interested in your long term. I'm going to stay with that.
Okay. Frank wants to leave, so we have public comment now. We've exited executive session. You want a public comment form, so go for it.
Okay, just want to give an update on the status of the filing that Artistry gave, Purple Crane gave us a charitable exemption. Right now, we've sent the, in the timeline, we sent the information that they applied to the state and to our lawyer up in Bob Fletcher up in Burlington. He came back with a list of examples and questions to ask Artistry, Purple Crayon, and they answered all of those questions. I sent that, again, the letter that they answered us with to Bob Fletcher, and he said that the only thing that he has a question on is the cast house, not the barn, but the cast house, and that it is not a building that is germane to the overall use of the land and property. So we can exempt that one building, and that's our feeling right now, but the rest comply.
And what portion of the tax would that cast house represent?
That would be less than a quarter, much less than a quarter, about $250,000.
20% or something?
Hmm?
20% of it, of the total?
Oh, probably 20% maybe. About a $250,000 building is the way we figure it. Mm-hmm. Out of $3 million. We figure out the percentage that way.
So they make, who makes the decision?
The listeners.
And when will that happen?
Pretty soon.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. But there's not a lot of, just to be clear, everybody else hasn't heard it, there's not a lot of discretion that you have. You don't get to just say, no, we don't want to.
No, we apply with the law. If they disagree with us or if we deny, the next step is the BCA and then the courts. But they can skip the BCA and go right to the court.
And there's a clear, very clear set of rules that it must be granted under certain circumstances.
Well,
I don't want to get into the details.
There are certain criteria we follow. Yes, of course. So, as far as town taxes, again, it would be $11,000 difference from using last year's pricing. So, with the one building going in, it would probably be about $10,000 difference.
And your feeling was?
They'd reduce their taxes by $10,000.
Right now, the town commission comes to the minister is $11,000. With that one building exempted from the request, it would probably be about a $10,000 difference.
And so you, if you grant this exemption, you are not going to negotiate any payment in lieu of taxes.
No.
You feel that is up to the select board to do that.
Yes.
Or some other entity. Not yourself.
Right.
Okay.
And there's a number of ways. Ben has described a couple of different ways that they can do it. They can do it in a lump sum and put stipulations on it and saying this is how that money has to be used. They could give it to TO, the fire department, or the North Quantum Fire Department and say the money has, would be used by the fire department to offset the requests that they make to the town. So there's a number of different ways to do this. So instead of asking the town for $40,000 like Abbott Library does every year, you could give them a lump sum and then have them do that in lieu of the requests.
Okay. Thank you. Any other public comment of items not on the agenda? Guess not.
So okay. Emily, can I just, I'll just
yes.
In. So road commissioner update. I think John attended the meeting and Art's here tonight too. So I'll let them chat with the board about what they heard on how it helped and any updates on roads. And you know the roads went to pieces here last week, and I think the guys got around that. The ball will take care of. The only thing I have is sort of important is all the permitting is in from the Cloudland Brook Bridge. And so Verizon has put together an RFP. It's not up to our RFP standards, and so I want to take theirs, RFP, and gel it into ours. I'm just concerned that if I wait another 2 weeks, it's another 2 weeks that we... And so I'm not sure whether or not the board would authorize me to put that RFP together like this week and get it on the street. It's basically the RFP will say, build this bridge according to the plans that we got that are available online.
I think we could approve that, could we not?
Yep.
Because I don't think...
Scott, do you have any comment?
Let me make sure I understand what Frank's asking. Are you asking to draft the RFP and publish it and just have the ability to do that?
Yeah, otherwise I'm just worried that waiting another 2 weeks is pushing us back, because I think we probably got to have that out on the street for at least a month. So I'm figuring if I get it out this week, I'd like to have the due date be the whatever the date is in April. That's our second meeting.
The first thought that comes to mind is, are there any parameters that we would need to decide on as a board within the RP, or is it pretty boilerplate stuff, or do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, it's pretty boilerplate. I mean, the RFP that Verizon's put together for us is, I think, oversimplified, to tell you the truth. But basically what it does the parameters, which are set by the state, they can't get in the water until a certain date. They have to be out of the water by a certain date. Those are all standard things. The plans that we got, I don't know if you've seen them. It's basically, there's the plans, do what's on the plans. So it's like you have to verbally describe, a lot of things. So there's nothing really exceptional there, and we certainly got a second cut to look at it after the RFPs come back too, and say, hey, wait a minute, we need to change this or add that. So it's
what's the dollar amount we're talking about?
$104,000.
So I guess the only concern I would express, given past this prologue, is we have not exactly gotten reimbursed. If we're going to have to put the money up, all of the money up, before getting reimbursed for all of it, and given some of the slowness on getting reimbursed in the past, I would have a little bit of reservation about putting a $100,000 RFP on the street and not having some sense of how quickly we would get repaid if we're going to be obligated to put the bill initially.
We have at least $75,000 in a bridge reserve fund, and I don't have those figures before me, but we may have more than that. So we already have most of what it's going to take to build that bridge in a reserve fund at this point. And the construction season, if we want to get that thing built this summer, which we have to do to get that grant, we need to move.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not coming out operating, so that's fine.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I mean, some it may. I mean, we'll get reimbursed. And I think, you know, lessons learned about getting back to the state, you know, and prodding them a little bit, you know, I've certainly learned something in the last couple of things. And quite honestly, the Slide Bank one, was that the one? Anyway, one of them came back pretty seamless. I think it was something else. No, the Slide Bank one was the one that was messed up, and it turned out that I was inept enough to not know that the thing had been floating around in different desks throughout the state. So that's why that was the one that screws up.
I move that we give Frank authority to finish the RFP and publish it to be due. The second meeting in April is the 17th. Does that give you enough time, Frank?
Yeah, because I'll
to have it out on the street?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get it out before the end of the week.
We need a second for that if somebody wants to.
I'll second it. When are we going to have it due by?
The 17th is the second meeting in April.
At noon?
Yeah, and I'll do the standard thing. We'll have them sent to Becky and then questions sent to me.
All right, you've... Emily, okay, I'm caught up.
We need a roll call vote. Frank?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. Scott?
Aye.
All unanimous vote in favor, and that's a done deal. Okay, we'll muddle through with the rest, Frank.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to sign these minutes?
Yeah.
And that's later on the agenda. We have to add on. We have to work on the agenda a little bit.
Yep.
We have Office 365 in both business for discussion and business for possible vote. Do you want to take that off of business for discussion? Number 7D.
Yep.
Okay.
Do we have a contract in front of us that we're entertaining? I didn't see anything in the agenda package.
No. Becky,
is it a discussion or is it a vote?
I'm not sure because I did not put this item on, Scott.
Okay.
I don't know where it's going to take us. We have got to... thank you, Frank. We have got to extend the contract from Holden Engineering for the scoping study in order to get reimbursed from the state. So I would like to put Holden Engineering scoping study at the end of business items for possible vote. That would make it H.
7H.
6H. Because we're going to have to vote to extend that. And I have that stuff. And other than that...
We also need to remove health insurance for employees. That was a carryover from last week. I didn't...
Okay. So we got rid of that.
A couple times ago, I didn't see it.
And anything else that wasn't on the agenda that needs to be put there? Did you have your hand up for public comment?
No.
Okay. Are we all set there?
I think so.
Okay, minutes. Were there any questions or concerns regarding the minutes that John did?
I need information from people on who...
I looked at those, and I did not know...
Made motions and seconded them
needed,
because
so.
I didn't have that because I didn't start taking minutes until I said I would do the clerk's responsibility, so... if people know who they nominated, it would be helpful. Otherwise, we're not going to have a record of that because we didn't have a recording, unfortunately, from last week. So,
do you remember any of those things?
Let me go back.
We we can defer these meetings until next time if you want. Frank might have remembered.
That's fine with me.
I move that we defer approving these minutes until the next regular meeting, and hopefully we can fill in the blanks. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Scott, are you in favor of that motion?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch. What are we moving?
We're going to not do the minutes, approve the minutes, and hope that Frank remembers some of those motions at the beginning.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you're in favor of that?
That's fine.
You would vote aye, John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself, aye. That's unanimous. Warrants for payment. John, we have check warrant 18088 for $937,000.
$937,000.
624.98.
Yep.
And then we have payroll check warrant 18087.
18087.
For sorry, I didn't put that. $12,254.55.
$12,254.55.
Correct. Do I need to have a motion?
Make a motion that we approve both of those.
Second.
We've got to sign those. Scott, we need a vote.
Yep.
John?
Aye.
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. We've had the road commissioners update, unless you want to add some more, Scott.
The only thing I would add is the status of the trucks. Right now, we're down two trucks.
We're down two?
Yep. One is in getting another check engine light came on, and John and I talked about it, and before it pretty went into self-protect mode, we sent it to Levin, and there were some other issues. We needed rear brakes and some other things, so it's over there getting fixed, and we won't have it back until probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
What are you going to plow that 12 inches of snow in?
We got a plan.
With a grader and a scraper truck. And
yeah. The other truck that's down right now is the scraper truck with broken springs.
It'll be up tomorrow.
Which the springs came in this afternoon, and I ran up and got them, and we'll have it fixed by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So
we've got two trucks and a grader and one dump. Or we will have.
We will have. We'll use the scraper truck and the grader on the back roads. We can plow the pavement with the other big truck. It won't be a problem.
They're too rough. The back roads are too rough right now for a plow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
all. And the other thing, Steve's probably the only one that noticed it, was Justin had the tractor out this afternoon with the rake on the back of it. Smoothing up the roads. All we do is tow the rake behind it and we pull everything into the center of the road. It doesn't fix the mud, but it aerates it, levels out all the ruts, fills in the potholes. It does make traveling the road a lot nicer, and it does help dry it out. So, with the weather permitting, we will be doing that every day next week. That tractor will be on the road until that rate somewhere once they thaw out in the morning. So, and that's when we will fix roads, come in early like we did Sunday morning at 2 o'clock, and we fixed the deepest holes that we had. We put each a half in them, and so far I haven't had any phone calls about them. But I got one this morning on Dana Road. There's a mud hole up there. We'll go out tomorrow morning once the scraper truck is fixed, and we'll fix that one up.
So you're gaining on it, maybe?
Yeah. The phone's not ringing off the hook, so things are going good. I've been around to a few other towns in my travels, and we're a lot better off than some of the other towns. And we got a compliment from Mike today. We were the only town to plan ahead.
Oh, to get in material?
To get material in. The other towns are behind the eight ball now, screaming for material, and they don't have enough trucks to get on material.
That's good.
So, we're doing good as far as that goes. So. And the grader, we got that fixed. It had an antifreeze leak into the head. And luckily we caught it before it did any real damage to the motor. It was just a matter of pulling the head off, rebuilding the head, and then replacing the gasket. And so that's...
So that shouldn't have been too bad financially.
Still would be several thousand, but
yeah.
Labor at 12-15 hours at $150 an hour.
Yeah.
Milling of the head and
but it was gonna cost
a lot better than motor job.
Yeah, and it was gonna cost us between $1,600 and $2,000 to have it towed down or hauled down there and then hauled back. So we saved that money by having to do it at the shop. So
excellent. Okay, anything else on roads?
I've got some highway issues I want to raise. We don't necessarily need to get deep into them, but I just want to bring them up for discussion. One is the time clock, and I want to get a sense whether we're actually, I know we're using it, but I mean in terms of the punches, are we actually using that for payroll? We need to, we're not really using the time clock other than just to punch in, but we're not actually using it for payroll or monitoring, time entries. It's really not worth it. So I'm curious whether we're doing that. Another topic is, I know Frank has brought up the Culver marking project and I wanted to know whether that's still on the horizon. And also, I'm just going to list them out. You can hit them as you go, Frank. And then
Frank has gone home. I guess you didn't hear that because he's ill tonight, so he's not here to answer.
I'll save him for when he's back.
Okay.
I can answer this Culver question.
Yeah, go ahead.
We haven't found a suitable marker that's cheap enough to mark the culverts with is the biggest problem. Most of the things we found are like upwards of $15, $20 a piece for a post for each end of the culvert. And by the time you do 800 culverts, the amount of money is astronomical. So that's Frank is still trying to find something suitable that would stay up year round and not get destroyed.
Okay.
Okay.
Emily, the only other thing I would say is the meeting that we had today with Todd Eaton from the state about how hell. He feels that during the discussion he's had with Frank and then with John and I about the plan for how hell, he feels that we're headed in the right direction with what we want to do to it. The only suggestion he had was maybe split it. It's 1.8 miles. So instead of doing 1.8, maybe do 9/10 of a mile and spend whatever you have for money on that 9/10 and then next year do the other 9/10. Depending on what figures we get for estimates on, or bids, I should say. know, he said, you may, depending on the number, you might have enough money to do the whole thing. But he said that would be his suggestion.
Well, perhaps if we got a Haven grant, we might.
That was kind of what I said to him. It would depend on that.
And Frank had, he had that Haven grant application on the list here. We probably will defer that till the next meeting because I don't know where he's at with that. But we will have to get that in. And I suppose we could give him approval to put that Haven grant in, even though he isn't here to discuss it. Okay, business items for possible vote. Adopt select board rules of meetings and procedures. I guess that's in my wheelhouse now because Scott sent me that an email to that effect. And my feeling would be, after looking at this and looking at the draft and looking at what BLTC suggests, that we readopt the meetings rules and procedures that were in effect last year. And if indeed you want to still have the meetings in the winter start at 6 o'clock until 7, and instead of 7 during standard time, we could change them to that effect and then adopt them. What kind of discussion do we have, board people?
So Emily, you don't want to make any of the changes that were suggested for this year?
Well, to be honest, I found your changes kind of confusing. That's going to take quite a while to do that and do it correctly. And there's an awful lot of gaps there. These other rules are working pretty well. We don't seem to have any major problems that I can see. They work pretty well. I looked at these, the ones that we adopted last year. They follow the BLTC template almost verbatim. And that's what BLTC is suggesting. And so I don't really see any reason to spend hours and hours changing the rules and procedures. That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
Well,
you threw it back to me, and that's what I determined.
Okay, fair enough. I hear that you don't want to make any changes. I think one change that Frank already made that is still in the rules is eliminating the public comment at the end of the meeting. So are you saying you want to reinstitute having public comment at the end of the meeting?
I didn't believe that was in this in the one that was adopted. It just said there must be public comment. It said at the beginning of the meeting, there shall be 10 minutes allotted for public comment on issues not contained in the agenda. As necessary and by majority vote, the body may increase the time for public comment. It says nothing about having public comment at the end of the meeting.
Well, I think there were some suggestions made by BLTC, which I forwarded everybody. I do think there are some changes that really should be made. Many of them are in the draft that is in the agenda package. I'm not there, so I can't get a read on what the other board members are feeling. If the board members who are there don't want to entertain any changes, I guess that seems fine. Frank, while he was still the chair, had reviewed the changes of the draft that's in the packet, and he actually concurred with those changes. So it's unfortunate Frank's not here to participate in this conversation, because I think he had some particular feelings about the public comment section.
I did speak with Frank about it, and I said, how many of these changes are near and dear to your heart? And he said, except for public comment, not having it twice, he was not married to any of the changes.
But I did not speak with him this evening regarding that. Well, I mean, I'm not there to get a sense of what the rest of the board is. I guess I would ask for a straw poll since I'm not there and get a sense of which way people are leaning. But I think it's unfortunate that, I mean, some of the changes that are in the suggested revisions are actually, in my opinion, quite necessary. I think we have some issues that occur on a regular basis that should be addressed. And, you know, Emily, certainly you can, as the chair, you can handle that of your own accord as the chair in the middle of a meeting. Without it necessarily being the policy, but I think it's certainly better being the policy. And, you know, a couple of things that come to mind is that we have often had people make assertions of conflicts of interest or violations of open meeting law, and it really tends to make our meetings get a little bit out of control at times. And again, certainly, Emily, you have the power and authority to stamp that kind of stuff down when it occurs, but certainly I think it's better if it's in our rules of procedure. And so some of those changes in there were designed to keep our meetings more focused and keep them more from getting out of control as they have in recent times. I think the thing that's not in our current draft is it doesn't limit an individual's public comment to 2 minutes. I don't think it does. It talks about 2 minutes during a motion, but during the public comment period, I know Frank talked about this several times, is that theoretically somebody could, one person could use up the entire 10 minutes of public comment period if he or she wanted. So our public comment period at the beginning of the meeting doesn't limit a speaker to 2 minutes. But again, I'm not there. If the wind is blowing in the direction not to do any changes, I'm not gonna push it.
I need a motion on the floor one way or another.
Do our current ones cover special meetings?
Special meetings, how to notice special meetings. I saw that email from Neil. How to notice special meetings, emergency meetings, and regular meetings are all in state statute.
Right.
So I don't think that's a problem. But no, they are not in these current ones. In the how to notice those all are not necessarily there. But they're all covered in state statute, so...
And we have to follow state statute anyway.
It's kind of like the conflict of interest stuff that was in Scott's draft. It's all in the conflict of interest policy, so I'm not sure we need it in both places. That was my feeling. This was just my feeling. But I need a motion to do something.
I'll make the motion then that we readopt the existing select board rules of procedures and update them to reflect the change of meeting time, as long as we're going to continue to have that.
Okay. So we'll have it at 6 o'clock during regular time and 7 o'clock during daylight saving time.
Yes.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Then we need to vote on that. Scott?
Abstain.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Emily, aye. So we adopt the ones from last year, and I will get the time of meetings changed, and then we'll have it to sign at the next meeting. Road access permit.
Hold on 1 second.
We have an application for a new driveway to a primitive campsite by Laredo Zola and Jan Salzman. And we are going to have to set up a site visit for that. This is the permit and the map that goes with it.
Not to change it. Do we have catering permits we needed to do?
Yes, but the road access permit is first on the business items. Oh, I missed the, I'm sorry, I missed the catering permit. We'll go back to there. That's all right.
Just want to make sure we don't forget it.
No, we'll do those next. I apologize. Have you seen where this new driveway is? Have they marked it or anything? It's right, it's just past where they stopped plowing the road. You stopped plowing the road, I believe.
Are they going to use this year round?
This is Karen isn't here anymore. This is a little confusing. They asked whether it's a farm access. I'm assuming, and I have not driven up there, I assume it comes off of the town road just before you get to the trees. Is there a farm access there?
There's something in there.
There's something there, but there's a camper down in that field.
Well, they want to make a primitive camp, and the question was whether they needed to have a permit for that farm access to make it into for a primitive camp. And we told them they did. And so this is the application. And so we will have to set up a site visit. We'll have to get them to mark it, and then we'll go from there. And so why don't I try and get hold of them and set up a site visit, find out when Frank gets healthy, and anybody that wants to come can come. I don't know where it is. I mean, how far do you plow? Just to Antel Shyway?
Just enough distance beyond it to turn the truck around. Beyond Chris's driveway.
So would that farm access that they've got, do you plow to that?
Maybe, maybe not.
I will call Laredo and then we'll try and
I doubt we go that far.
I'll try and get a time when we can go and look at it.
Yeah, because we plow basically to the first tree. And that's it. And we just leave a pile of snow right there.
And here it says that currently the town plows up to this field entrance. Until the snow is gone, it's going to be hard to tell exactly where it is. So another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I think
does that give a telephone number of where you can reach him?
Yep. 802-236-0735.
Don't run off with that paperwork, because I told them they'd never get them back to them. Okay, we've got two catering permits. One is from, thank you. One is from NATO Family Vineyards for a...
NATO?
N-E-D-D-O Family Vineyards for a benefit for Team Hope for the Prouty 2019 at Suicide 6 on... April 11th, Thursday, from 5 to 8 p.m. And one is for American Crafted Spirits. And this event is at Artist Street on 3/29/19, 7:30 to 9:30, celebrating women in music.
I need those, and I'll get the dates. I'll make a motion that we approve both of the cases.
You want to see those to get the dates?
Yeah.
I'll second that. Scott, do you have any questions?
I didn't see the first request, but the second one looks fine to me. Are there any...
The other one just came in just recently. Excuse me?
Any safety concerns? Traffic concerns, anything like that that the board might have about the Suicide 6 request?
I wouldn't think so. How many people did they estimate were going to be there on the Suicide 6 one? I can't believe it'd be any worse than skiing on a Sunday.
Yeah, I didn't say how many people. Is it? Yeah, this one's a different... Form. Yeah, there's no number of people on the one at Suicide 6, but it's also not a question on the form either. Because it's a different, it's an application for a special event permit, so I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, usually they indicate the number of people they expect, even right, on the special event.
The other one does, but this is, the one for Suicide 6 is on a different form. It's an app, it says application for special event. It's asking what they're charging and ask if there's limits on the number of purchases, but doesn't ask for the number of people. And I don't know if that's because Suicide 6 has already a permit to sell liquor. I don't know.
Yeah, they should already have.
Well, yes, but that's Silo Distillery catering an event. It isn't a Suicide 6 event. Well,
the Silo is the one at Artistry. The Vineyard is the one at Suicide 6. It's also not, it's also, it's probably because it's not a spirited liquor, it's just wine that they're selling, and that may be the difference in the type of application.
I don't think the type of alcohol, I don't think there's a different, to my knowledge, there's not a different form for the type of alcohol. We got I can't remember where it was, but it was up on House Hill Road. It was a sporting event, and so I think there's a distinction between a catering event and a special event, like a sporting event where they intend to serve alcohol, beer, or something like that. And so that's probably why there's a distinction. So there must be, the event must be, they're not
it's a fundraiser is what it is.
Right. Does the person applying, does the organization applying, do they have a liquor license on their own? Either which way, my main question generally is around.
They have a manufacturer's license.
Yeah.
It's their vineyard, and I think under, there's some, if you are the vineyard and you're selling it, then yourselves, then there's some other statute that applies, if I remember correctly, but don't hold me to that.
Yeah. I think that either which way, I think generally the concerns I have about these things is how many people, what are the safety concerns, things like that.
Yeah, it's 5 to 8 p.m. It says that they won't serve any more than 8 classes per person, and less if the server feels fit, is what it says on the form.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I'm okay with it.
I move that we approve both liquor permits.
Second.
We need a vote. Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. Okay. Do you recall, does Becky have to sign those and we just mark them approved, Scott?
Becky's.
Is that correct?
We usually sign them, and then they get sent back. Becky usually sends them back to the Department of Liquor.
That's for the clerk's signature, so.
I'll check with Becky. We've approved them, and I'll check with Becky on Friday. She won't get them till then anyway.
Yep.
Okay. Mary Took Property. Update on quick claim deed. All right, this, I expected to find this in this paperwork, and I did not. And I cannot tell you, I know that Frank got it approved, and Frank is sick today.
So did somebody print out somebody should have printed out the, well, I was hoping Frank would have printed out the revised quitclaim deed that was sent over to us. Do you all have that in front of you?
I have a quitclaim conveyance of lease lands. It is not filled out with the town or city or any of that information. I expected to find something here that would be a completed document.
So so you all should have gotten it, but you sound like you don't. I just sent it to you, so somebody can print that that quitclaim deed off, and then get it signed. We should really get this done.
Yes, because Mr. Wetmore is here. When did you send that?
Just now. I've got it. I'll print it.
Okay, John's going to print it. Excellent. We'll get to here in a minute. If you can be patient.
John.
Absolutely.
Send it, I'll get it.
Good. Thank you. All right. Print. So that hasn't come yet.
Print two, so that we've got one for the files, just to have on, just to give back to Becky and to. So we have one on file as to what we did.
Yep.
John, did you say you don't have it yet?
No, I haven't. Art went to get it from the printer. I said it hasn't been printed yet.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Should become an art. There's Michael when you need him.
Right.
He got out of the mess.
Maybe that's the right one. Yeah, that looks better. Alright, there's copy one. Thank you for sending that, Scott.
No problem.
And you looked this over, and the lawyer that Frank saw looked it over, and that everything was fine. Yes, Scott?
In my opinion, it's fine. A gentleman named Robert Mandy looked at it. I'm assuming that was an informal request. I don't know if we actually hired him or not, but he gave his blessing on it as well. I don't think there's really any risk. I think it's the release is fine. It's a limited release. It releases just this parcel. So we still have the bigger issues to deal with around the entire, all of that lease land. But in my opinion, the wording of the quitclaim deed is fine.
All right, and do I sign this as chair of the select board, or do we all have to sign it?
It's whoever we authorize to sign it, and I think it would make sense for you to sign it.
We'll make a motion that we authorize Emily to sign the quitclaim deed for the Mary Took property.
Second.
What's today, the 20th?
Yes.
Here you go.
Just need to have a vote.
Scott, vote.
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Aye.
Steve? Emily? Aye.
Thank you. I know Mary appreciates that.
Happy selling.
Thank you.
Also,
to get a copy of the minutes where it was voted on for you to sign it.
Tonight, you should find them on the website.
Perfect.
On Monday.
Great. Thank you for your patience.
If you don't, just send me an email and harass me.
Okay.
It's okay. I don't mind.
Great. Would you thank Steve for me? I mean, Scott. I didn't mean to see you.
Okay, what's next on the list?
Approve and sign town minutes.
Here are the town minutes, and did anybody get these read? I read through them and I did not find any errors.
They look okay.
We have to approve these and sign them. So I need a motion. Did you happen to have time to read them, Scott?
I'm sorry, which topic are we on now?
Annual town minute meeting. Minutes.
Oh, no, I've not had a chance to sign them yet.
Becky really wants these signed. Do you feel comfortable taking our word for it that they are okay?
Well, I need to sign them, right?
Well, you'll have to come up and sign them. There's,
That's fine. I'll come up and sign them tomorrow.
I need a motion.
Make a motion. We approve the 2019 town meeting minutes as submitted.
Second. Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Emily? Aye.
That was
unanimous.
You seconding that, Emily?
Pardon?
You seconded that?
Yes, I did.
No wonder why Michael was never in the conversation half the time. I don't know how you can do that.
I'll have to sign those eventually, but they'll have to come back here anyway. Okay, select board assistant, minute taker. Did you get the information from Cynthia Hewitt, Scott, that I sent around? Her.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. Frank and I were going to meet with Cynthia on Monday evening. Frank took ill, and he suggested I get Steve to meet with her. And we talked with her for about three quarters of an hour. She's got quite a bit of experience with computer, and I think organizationally she might help us out. She said she didn't like doing budgets, but I figured we probably wouldn't have her do the budget anyway. And she's an older woman, and she is retired, and she's going to live in town. She had a house in town several years ago, and when she got a divorce, she and her husband sold it. And I thought she'd be a pretty good bet. What did you think, Steve?
I felt the same.
And so I explained to her that if she took the minutes for the meetings, posted them to the website, and did that, and did agendas, that would be great. And if she wanted to do more, more things were available to do. And she seemed to be interested in doing more things. So what I'm looking for is, do we want to offer her the position of select board assistant? And if so, at what rate of pay do we wish to offer that? What would your thoughts be?
My main question is this someone as an interim solution, or is this what you all feel, would she be the board's long-term person, or is it sort of just that someone to fill the shoes for now until we, you know, are we still looking for someone like Jonathan, if someone like Jonathan is out there, and if we can try and secure somebody like Jonathan, because I get the feeling from what you're saying and from her resume that she may do a fine job in terms of our basic needs, but, you know, Jonathan really did quite a bit. And I'm not getting the sense that she would quite do all of that, all the things that Jonathan did. So, you know, Jonathan was a huge asset to the board. And so I'm curious whether the board feels that we still want to pursue someone like Jonathan in all the ways that Jonathan helped us out, or do we just want to, you know, again, is she going to be our long-term solution?
Well, I can't speak to how long term she would be. I gave her the list that Michael generated when he advertised the position the last time as to what the duties would be, and she had looked it up on the website. And the only thing that she had when I gave her that entire sheet, the only thing that she had any qualms about was, she didn't really like to do budgets. But Jonathan didn't do the budget either. And so I was looking at this as not just a temporary secretary position, but it would hopefully, writing grants and things didn't seem to bother her. She thought she'd be able to do that. I think that we would have to give her the technical help to do a highway grant, for instance, but she had administered grants for one of her employers. That was the way they got funded, doing their research. So I kind of think that she would be not an interim person, but more of a, hopefully a long-term person that, although probably doesn't have the expertise that Jonathan has, personally, for a 15-hour-a-week position, I don't think we're going to find that. We were very lucky to have Jonathan.
I mean, I wasn't there at the interview, but looking at the resume anyways, other than not having a background in municipal stuff, it certainly seemed like she was plenty qualified.
And she did say, well, I'll have to bone up on a few things and state statutes and stuff, which indicated to me that she was interested in trying to figure out the thing. And there again, you know,
the best candidate we've had since we've been looking, and we've been looking for a year.
So. Well, yeah. And Karen, although I spoke to Karen after you mentioned that she was willing. She indicated to me in an email that she would be willing to help out in a pinch and take minutes short term, but she couldn't commit to doing the kind of work that Jonathan did. She just didn't have the time. So I guess that's kind of what Frank got from her. So she really isn't an option except to take minutes, and she doesn't want a full-time job at that either. I spoke with her this evening. She was here before the meeting started, and so she is not an option really, except to guilt her into taking minutes for a few times. If we were to hire Miss Hewitt, she has a scheduled trip for California, and she would miss one meeting in April because she's already scheduled a trip. I didn't think that was a problem. So I need some input from the board here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, to speak to Scott's point, I don't know what you do if you stumble across somebody in, you know, a year or two from now that, you know, but I would think in a year or two from now that she would be
pretty well
up to speed on things. I mean, it'd be great to hire Jonathan tomorrow or a Jonathan tomorrow, but the likelihood of that happening, no, she's...
We haven't had much response from any of the ads.
Yeah, but the reality is, to be perfectly honest, and this is not to put it on any one person, we really didn't try that hard either to try and go out there and find another Jonathan. Not that we necessarily would have found one, but I think our efforts in trying to fill that position have been pretty, we haven't really put a ton of effort into it, to be honest.
I thought you put something on the government website up in the state and stuff. I thought you had done that for that.
Oh, sure. Well, we could have done so much more to try and recruit for the position. But, you know, I and that's why I bring it up. Thinking long term, you know, when we think about where we want to take things long term, Jonathan was part of that vision of where we're heading. You know, there have been various conversations at times about having, I think, even someone at town meeting brought up the notion of having a part-time town administrator, and whether we go that direction or not, I don't know. But having that kind of more in-house expertise, and Jonathan really, if he had stayed, he really would have been that kind of institutional knowledge and continuity in the long term. So I do think that, I mean, my personal view is that having someone of that caliber is really key to not only current operations but to the future of the town. And I think that if we try it harder, we might actually, you never know, there may not be anybody out there, but we could certainly try harder. So we do have an immediate need. I don't want to dispute that. We really need to have somebody fill the shoes. So I don't object to having somebody. But again, back to my main question, is this the long-term solution or interim? And I'm getting the sense from my fellow board members that this is that you all are more in the sense that this is a long-term.
I think this is no different than when you hire a highway person. You have them on a 6-month probationary situation, and if things don't fly well, then they don't stay. And this is something where we're just going to have to see how it goes. At the very least, she will take minutes, she will do the agendas, she will get them posted to the website, she will put up notices, and then I think we'll go from there. And as I recall, when Jonathan came on board, it was kind of a work in progress to figure out what we would have Jonathan, I wasn't here on the board, but what the board would have Jonathan do. And because he had a large amount of government experience, he was extremely useful. That being said, I don't think it's unlikely that we haven't found that yet, and that position has been open for quite some time. And at the very least, by hiring this person, which is the only person that has come forward to even apply for anything other than the girl that was looking for a full-time position and evaporated into the clouds, I don't see as how we have an awful lot to lose. She may grow into the job and do very well on most things, or maybe everything, or she may find that it's overwhelming and she doesn't want to. But in the meanwhile, we'll see how it flies. Now, that's my feeling. Whether it'll be permanent for 10 years down the road, I might be dead tomorrow anyway, so how do you know? I mean, you got to start somewhere.
I'm just voicing concerns, that's all. I do think we have an immediate need. No dispute there. I think we need to do something. It's also about setting expectations when you hire somebody too. And you know, you asked about what you, we obviously need to talk about the pay rate. Did she make a request for a specific hourly rate?
No.
Okay.
She did.
No, she said whatever we could afford.
Well, whatever. I don't know if anybody has a number that wants to go out there.
What have we paid other similar?
I think we started, Jonathan, maybe at 17 or
that's
18.
That's what I was thinking.
I think Jonathan started at 17. He got bumped to, if I recall right, 18 and then eventually 20.
So what kind of rate?
He wasn't at 20 for very long before he left.
So what kind of rate of pay would you want her to start at?
Oh, I'm not going to tell her number. You guys can. I mean, personally, I think it probably would be somewhere on the lower end of the scale. But you guys interviewed her, so you all are sensitive that she's worth.
I kind of feel we have to put her on the same kind of the same level as you would the listers or the auditors or what you're paying them to start with at the very least, and then if the performance is such that she is doing a lot more, then you would give her a raise. That would be my thought. I think we're paying the listers $17 an hour, aren't we?
I would think 17 would be reasonable to start out, and then
okay,
make,
so
make adjustments accordingly after that.
So I need a motion to offer her a position at whatever per hour.
I'll make a motion to hire Cindy Hewitt at $17 an hour.
I'll second that.
Cindy or Cynthia?
Cynthia.
Now, are we setting hour limits, and how are we? What are we
I told her that the position, as I recalled, was a 15-hour week position at the most, and I think we would start out with getting her here in a meeting and do the minutes and agenda and stuff first, and then work into the other. That would be my thought. If she starts to organize. If she starts to organize grants and stuff and paperwork and that kind of thing, then she's going to get quite a bit of time in. And we kind of really need that organization. That's my feeling. Scott, would you like to vote?
Abstain.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
I'll vote in the affirmative. And do I have the authority to email her and offer her that position?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott?
Abstain.
Okay. I will do that. Transportation items, TA 60 approval. All I have before me, unless someone has gotten one more recently, and Frank isn't here, is a TA 60 that is not complete. So I think we should move over that item. Unless, do you know that there's a TA 60 that was completed, Scott? Have you seen one?
I've not been involved in it this year.
Okay. Has anyone else seen it in an email? Okay, so we're going to move over that, and we'll put that on the next meeting's agenda. And the paving grant application, Frank has that as well. And I will talk to him about that. Okay, Office 365 contract digital media coordinator. Who put this on?
I put that on the agenda. Maybe it should be for discussion. I guess it really doesn't matter. We don't have to vote on it tonight. Just talking with Becky and Ellen, there is some confusion as to who is responsible for what, and it certainly seems to me that there is at least a feeling that toes have been stepped on as to persons responsible for setting up email accounts, restricting email accounts, and access to different parts of Office 365. And I don't... Becky feels that she's been made that person before, and I think we just need to clarify. We really ought to have one person that is doing all of it. To me, I don't really care who it is, although it does kind of make sense to have somebody that's in the office all the time that's the responsible party for that. But I just wanted to put it on here, talk about it, clear it up, and see where we want it to go.
So I think you're referring to me, John, because the only other person who deals with Office 365 is me. And I don't want to tread over, there's no point in stirring up water over the dam. But it is problematic to have the person who only uses email and doesn't use SharePoint or any of the other features in Office 365 to be the admin. And Becky and I have traded email, extensive email about this over the past year. And so I think there's been some mixed signals sent over the last year. Becky has actually expressed on more than one occasion that she actually doesn't want to be the administrator of Office 365, which is why I jumped in the first place. And the issues that you're hitting on, John, are really not, they're not Office 365 issues. They are public records. They are who is responsible, who are the custodians for public records. And the issue that needs to get settled, in my opinion, is not who's the appropriate administrator for Office 365. The question that needs to get answered by the board is who is the proper custodian for what records. So, for example, is Becky the custodian for select board email? Or are individual select board members the custodian? There are just these larger issues. The more important issue, even beyond who the custodians are, and I've said this in the past when the topic has come up about Office 365, is that we got some larger issues around management of electronic records. We've got records all over the place. We've got records that exist only on the website. We've got records that exist only on the file server. We have some that exist only in SharePoint. We have records that are just in email alone and not anywhere else. And so whoever is the administrator, assigning an administrator is the easy part. The hard part is getting our arms around where all of our records are and actually getting clarity around how we're going to handle electronic records, because I know one of Becky's concerns which she expressed recently, is that there were some loss of old email accounts. And but we also have planning commission members. We have other people in town government who use their private email addresses for town business. And Becky, nobody, including Becky, has any access to that email. So that's another problem when it comes to public records and custodians. So there's a much, much larger issue that we have to get our arms around, but multiple issues, actually, when it comes to electronic records in Office 365. To just address this one issue of who's going to be the administrator of Office 365 is just the simplest and easiest part of this whole thing. But I don't, you know, we really need to take on all of it, and it's kind of a mess, honestly. Bob Merrill, who was responsible for this stuff before us, he's kind of been warning us about this for a while. And I spoke with Bob recently about it, and, you know, it was sort of like deja vu all over again, that some of the things that he warned the board about a handful of years ago we're kind of dealing with now. So we really need to have a broader discussion about how we're going to handle electronic records, who the custodians, who the proper custodians are, where is the data going to live, what is our system of record, how we're going to handle all these things. You know, there are just a lot of questions that need to be answered.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a bigger topic other than what I was thinking of for the agenda of this topic for the agenda this evening. And yeah, it definitely does need to be discussed, and we need to figure out what we're going to do, because we do have files literally everywhere, people's personal computers, people's cell phones,
right,
you know, SharePoint, and as much as I personally hate SharePoint, it does keep everything in one spot if you can get everybody to use it. Now, is there some other product that we could use that would better serve the town? I don't know. But back to the coordinator of adding and removing accounts, you know, maybe that should be all part of this if we want to get into this. We're not going to fix this whole broad thing tonight, I wouldn't think. I'm just trying to... I put it on here to express concerns that had been expressed to me, and I feel that it's necessary and appropriate to bring that up at a meeting, and whether anything becomes of that is, you know... We'll see, but you know, when I've been, you know, let know on multiple occasions that, you know, somebody's email's been taken away and they didn't know for weeks, and somebody was trying to get a hold of them at the state level and they had no idea that it was gone. Whoever takes it away and doesn't let them know, if that's what happened, again, I don't know the whole story.
Right, but if we're going to make a decision about who's the administrator based on stories that, like that you just described, which are absolutely patently wrong, and it's too bad Frank's not here, because he would tell you. You're talking about Norm's email address, and you know, I'll tell the story all over again. I asked Norm personally whether he used town email, and he said he did not. So there's, you know, when you have an individual who's been assigned a town email address and has never logged in once, it begs the question, why are we spending money on an email account when the person who has been assigned that email account has never used it and said he didn't want one? And when that, and I know what you're referring to, and Frank confirmed it as well, he asked Norm whether Norm used his email, and he said no. And so, you know, you heard a simplified version that is just not correct. Nobody took his email away. He was asked whether he used his email, and he said no. And I actually told Becky back in November that I had cleaned out the email account that nobody was using. And there's no point, and unless the rest of the board feels differently, it feels like we should be spending money on, you know, whether it's 9 or 20 bucks a month on email accounts for people who aren't using. To me, I think that's a waste of money.
I wouldn't dispute that at all. And again, I'm not trying to put blame on anybody. Again, it's.
Yeah, but you're responding to a complaint, right? So, I mean, the better way to handle it, you know, Becky, it sounds like Becky brought her concerns to you, and now you're bringing her concerns to the board. I think the better approach would be for Becky to have her come and speak and have her come on the agenda. And so we can talk this out and figure out the best way to handle it. I don't think we're really going to solve this by having this sort of proxy conversation we're having right now. I think the better way to do this is have Becky come, get on the agenda. We can all talk about what's the best way to handle this and get it worked out. I mean, and whether we do it in a meeting or have a sidebar discussion, whatever, that's fine. But I guess, and I said it earlier, but I think it's a little bit problematic to have someone be the administrator who actually really barely uses Office 365.
Well, there's a second problem here, and you're kind of ignoring that, and that is that you can only have one person fooling around with the emails and the email addresses and the accounts and the whole thing. And it's either going to be Becky or it's going to be you. And at the moment, Becky is the town clerk. And my personal feeling is that the town clerk should be responsible for giving people their emails that go with the town and taking them away when they no longer are an official. And that function should stay with the town clerk, and it shouldn't stay with anyone else. And it should be something that happens here in the central office. And it is not, Norm's account is not the only occasion where accounts have been changed and no one has notified anyone of the change. It is very difficult to do business, and we are a business, when you have an individual that has an email account that then gets changed to a different address. And anyone that they deal with, the vendors and whatever that they deal with, are not informed that that account has been changed. And so they don't get any emails at all. And that is not acceptable.
So Emily, you're describing another thing that is patently false, okay? So I know what you're talking about. So Frank, I didn't make that choice. Frank came to me. And Frank asked me to make that change, first of all, right? So that wasn't like somebody just decided to do something. Frank, as the road commissioner, asked me to make that change, right? So first of all, that's the first thing to bear in mind. The second thing is that I set up an email alias, so that what you just described is just incorrect. All of the email sent to the previous email address still goes to the new email address. So nothing gets lost. So somebody could email the old email address and it will still get received.
Well, that seems a little strange because Ellen wasn't able to get hold of Art for 2 weeks.
That was at the beginning. It didn't work at first, and then Scott didn't make the workaround. So
the bottom line is, really, regardless, the bottom line is one person is going to be responsible for these email addresses, regardless of what you do with the rest of the the rest of the, whether SharePoint is or isn't used, whether we get a professional data man or somebody in here to help us straighten out the computer nightmare that we have, whether the server is way too large and it is not in a secure place. All of those things need to be addressed. But the bottom line is, one person needs to be responsible for changing and fooling around with email addresses. And so,
why does it have to be one person?
Because it is very confusing to have two people cooking in the same kitchen at the same time, and not communicating to one another as to what recipe they're making. That is why it is confusing, to say the very least, to have two people trying to administer one email situation, because one does not communicate with the other, and it makes it very challenging. And it is not good for the town. It is not good for those people that use their email addresses, and it just is, it's not professional.
That's just my opinion. Yeah, it's interesting how this has suddenly become an issue, because I will forward you an email from Becky, because Becky has said explicitly she didn't really want to do it. She said she really did. I can show you where in the past year, on more than one occasion, Becky has said, look, I really don't want to do this. It just fell into my lap and I started doing it. And so, I actually only started doing it because Becky really wasn't interested in doing it. And now all of a sudden, somehow it's changed. And to me, this is just another example of these little battles that we have, these little power struggles that go on between different parts of town government. It's pretty silly that we're having these little power struggles over stupid little things like who is in control of email. This is not how IT works. You really don't have systems like Office 365 and say, oh, we're just going to have one ad. That's not how it works in the real world. So to say that we could just have one admin, it's really not, that's not good practice from an IT standpoint. And really, Becky and I traded email last fall, and she actually, again, expressed that she really didn't have a lot of interest in being the admin. And I told her that, and this is where this whole topic of contracting out came up, is really the better solution is not to have somebody within town government doing it at all, but to hire an outside company to be our administrator, and they have multiple people within their company who can be who can handle our requests. But because there's so much more that we do in Office 365 besides email, and Becky, I don't know the extent of Becky's experience, but she certainly doesn't administer SharePoint. So are you saying, Emily, we should have one person who just does email and then somebody who administers the rest of Office 365? I mean, I really think we need to sit down and talk about what's the smartest way to do this, rather than having the kind of conversation we're having right now, which in my mind is just another one of these old pissing matches. That's just really dumb.
I would have to agree that although the topic not being dumb, that the pissing match is about such topic is dumb. I guess what it comes down to is if you've got one person, and that I don't know if this is an appointed position, if this is an assumed role, if this has been something that, here, you do this, but if you... I personally, as a select board member, would have a problem without the board saying for me that it was okay to change somebody's email, or the board saying that I am the administrator of the email or whatever it is, because you have a problem with if you are making changes without being authorized to make changes, you're now making decisions and, you know, as one person of the board doesn't have the authority to really do anything, and maybe this isn't, you know, I don't know.
John, it's not like it's a big secret that I've been the administrator of Office 65 for the last 2 years. I have always communicated. Anytime I've made a change in Office 65, I've always communicated the changes to Becky. So it's not, Becky's the other administrator. And again, every time I've made a change, I always tell Becky what I've done. So none of this should come. It's not like things are happening and Becky doesn't know about it.
I can forward you
multiple email messages where I've made changes in Office 365 and turned around and told Becky, hey, Becky, this is what I do.
I think unless there's a motion on the floor to do something here, I think we need to just move on and get the rest of it. We've still got a long way to go to get this done, this meeting done. And do I hear a motion?
I make a motion that we move on to the agenda.
Sounds good. Holden Engineering is next. And what the deal is with Holden Engineering, I got a call on Monday from a gentleman there. And although we have made the choice and the state has signed off on our report, we cannot get our money until we revise our contract agreement with them to extend it. And so I have before me a contract extension that Holden got to the office here Monday afternoon, and it has to be signed and given back to Holden in order for us to get our reimbursement. So I need to entertain a motion that extend this contract until September 1, 2019, or we will not get reimbursed for the scoping study.
I will make a motion that we extend our contract. What was the date? September.
Until September 1, 2019.
September 1, 2019 with Holden Engineering.
Second.
What does extending the contract, is there anything we have to do? Is it hold us to anything, or?
No, this should not entail any more money. They've already been paid. The problem is that the contract expired on 7/16/2018, which means that we do not have a contract with them right now, and we cannot get reimbursed unless we extend this contract so that they can finish up the documentation to get our reimbursement from
the
state.
Expired date on
it? It expired on 7/16/2018.
So they still have stuff that they need to do in order for us to get reimbursed.
They have very little left to do except the state is correct. The state will not give us our money. Scott, do you have any comment?
No comment.
Okay, I need a motion.
I made one. Steve seconded it.
Did you get a second?
Yep, Steve.
All those in favor? Scott?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Myself? Aye. I will sign it on behalf of the board. Jonathan signed the last one. Okay, next on the list, discussion of the LEMP, Local Emergency Management Plan. We worked on that Monday night. Steve and I went down and dealt with Kevin and Tori Littlefield, and that's coming along pretty well. We've just got to finalize it and write it up, and that should be done. We have FastSpot operational agreement. As far as I'm concerned, Frank isn't here. We will let that one go. Do I hear any objection? The plan property update. Frank is not here, and he gave us no information. So I think we'll put that one on the next meeting agenda as well. Any comments, Scott?
Nope.
And repeater update. This is you, John.
So I emailed last night or this morning. Let me get it up on here. Did anybody see the quote from Wells Communication for the repeater?
I did.
Did you see it, Emily?
I did.
Did you see it, Scott?
I did.
Okay. So,
my only question is this an FY19 expenditure, or so is it coming out of the reserve?
I believe we're going to take it out of the radio reserve. I forget how much is in there, but I think there's enough in there.
Yeah,
to cover it.
Yeah, there should be enough in there. I think there's like $15,000 in the radio reserve.
I spoke to Kevin about this briefly, and he thinks if you're going to do anything up on the repeater site, he's not sure that that easement ever got finished.
Yeah, I've heard something.
And so to put another $10,000 worth of equipment up there with no easement seems a little bit of a concern. You talked to John. You talked to Phil about that easement. That's what he was working on, wasn't it?
I didn't talk to him on that easement. No, I did not.
You did not.
No.
Anyway, that easement has. Kevin didn't seem to think that the easement had ever gotten finished, and so I think that would need to be done first. He also had a question on the height of the antenna, and was that going to be low enough so that you didn't have to go through Act 250? If that's going to be,
it would be the same height. That's
so it would be the same.
It sounded there in the quote. It said something about an antenna. I got the quote, haven't questioned me on anything. So there may be a replacement of the antenna by the looks of things, but there will be one antenna up there when they get done. And there will be a duplexer, which basically allows the same antenna to be used by two separate repeaters. So what will happen is the signal will come in, it will go through the duplexer. The duplexer will decide what frequency it's coming to, and it will send that signal to the proper repeater. If we were to, without doing it that way, we would have to have a whole other site, because your antennas can only be so close together, and then you have to put up another tower and other issues. So this ended up being the cheaper alternative, and just utilizing the site that we already have, because it's, and there's probably a better site in Pomfret as far as actual communication, but it's established and works most everywhere in town.
The other question was, if you were just going to do town within communication within trucks, and you didn't have to talk to Woodstock, would this tower out here do?
No, it was the fire tower. Fire repeater was moved here for a period of time, and it was then subsequently moved back. They had done a computerized topographical whatever radio frequency study and said this was a better location than the other location. First off, they put it up 10 feet higher than it is, and then we got in trouble because it was higher than the 50 feet or whatever triggers Act 250. So we had to lower it, which made it even worse. And with the site here, probably only half of the town is covered. And so when you're going through a repeater, what happens is if you've got two people a half mile apart where you could go radio to radio, they still have to go through that repeater. So you could be close to each other, but not be able to talk to each other because you can't talk to the repeater. So that's why it was switched back over to the location it's at now.
Okay.
Well, because this got a fine signal to Woodstock here.
And then the last thing that he was concerned about is that you have access to go up to that computer up through Dodge's?
Yep.
Okay, but you don't have legal access. Dodge's has now been sold twice.
Right.
And as long as Nelson's probably there, you could probably still go up there.
Right.
But that's another issue, too, that we ought to deal with.
I mean, yes, that, you know, that all needs to get dealt with for sure. And I don't know as though I would necessarily move forward without at least starting that process again. However, everything other than the labor of the work up there, all of this stuff is, if it were to be moved at some point.
I think you might be grandfathered in there under the 15-year...
would be removed.
...rule, you know, that you've been using that for 15 years. So you sort of have rights based on that, I would think.
Yeah, well, I think getting an easement and access up there is probably...
Right.
But if you had an easement to the area up there where the antenna is and then had a... an easement, an access easement, but that allowed you to... an access easement that granted you the use of, whether it's through Dodge's or the logging road on Webster, to get up there. Is that all on Webster?
Yeah.
And yes, you can't... I don't think you can drive your car or a truck up that way.
I took the truck up there.
Did you? From Webster?
To get the batteries up there?
If you get the easement from Webster side, you're only dealing with one person.
Right.
If you go from Dodge's...
It's a tougher road to get up there.
Yes, but...
It really is.
If you've got a four-wheeler, then...
If you've got a wheeler, it's no big deal. But to take, like, my Toyota pickup up there, you're...
Bouncing around,
doing some damage to the truck. Because of all the bushes and branches and everything.
So, basically, we really need, in order to make this a functional operation, we really need a legal easement so that we can... make the road decent enough to get up there with a four-wheel drive vehicle and trim enough brush so that you aren't constantly hitting the mirrors.
And if you really need to get there, a year-round access to it, too. That's the worst part. You're not going to get a pickup up there in the wintertime.
Well, you're not going to plow either side in the year.
No.
Your year-round access is going to be a
snowmobile.
ATV with tracks on it.
Which would be no problem going up either way.
It's not a problem.
Other than finding our snowbank that we make.
There's plenty of us that have them, so.
Plow the road. But the easement, if I remember correctly, Phil was doing the easement
and he had it basically almost done, and then I don't know what happened.
Either he or someone came up to see Becky, and the emails are gone. It was on his computer, on his email, and they're gone. So the easement that's almost done is missing. So I guess we need to try and figure out what we're going to do about an easement, because that would make sense to get that finished off before we put more money up there. If we're going to do this project, you're going to have to get a second bid or second quote. $10,000. You're going to have to get a second quote. I couldn't put three lights over on the town hall for $1,600. So,
what's the policy? What does it say in the policy about waiving that?
Why would you want to waive it, John?
You got to get more than one quote.
Because Wells Communication, they have the ones that know what we have and have done all the work on our radios and this whole. I don't know.
Are we buying a service, or are we buying stuff?
Both.
Are we buying equipment, or are we buying services?
Both.
Is it more of one or the other? It looks to me when I look at the quote,
you got $3,000 worth of service, and the rest is equipment. So yeah, I mean, it's more equipment than service. But again, though, every time we have somebody come work on our grader, we don't go out and get bids to fix it.
But when we do that, we should be working under some master services agreement. And like, if we, for example, we contracted Nortrax, that should have gone through some, you know, at some point in time, it would have gone through some bidding process that we selected Nortrax. And then we have a master services agreement with them, and then we just keep buying off of that agreement. We can do the same thing here, but I get what you're saying, but you can, by getting a second quote, you can still, through the procurement process, say, well, even if the second quote is cheaper, we still think we should go with this other quote because of the past and the familiarity the vendor has. So, you know, I just out of due diligence and just out of transparency, I think it is good to get that second quote. Unless there's a really overriding reason not to. That's just my two cents, though. I mean, we have a policy, we should follow it.
It just seems like they are our communications service provider. I guess it doesn't make a difference to me, but it's nice to know that you've got the same people working on your equipment all the time. That's all.
Yeah, no, I get that. But that's part of the procurement process. That's what I'm saying, is that rather than it being a foregone conclusion that you're always going to go with the same vendor, you put out the request, you get other bids, you evaluate those bids, and you still can select the vendor that you've done business with. I think from a due diligence standpoint, and to demonstrate we're being responsible with spending public money, that's why we do. Rather than just going, I mean, it's easy, right? If we just always go to the same people, it's easy.
You're right. We could get a quote from the people that used to service our radios, but we got rid of them because they were unresponsive. And every time they came down to reprogram something, it was always wrong. And
I'm not saying go get quotes from people who suck. I mean, go. Who else is out there? I don't know. You know better than I do. But are there other vendors you can go out there? And you know, there's value in going out and talking to other vendors because you don't know. I mean, they could offer something better. You just don't know. But this is why.
It certainly sounds like we've got the time to do it if we're not going to do this without having an easement. So. You know, I can certainly get a hold of somebody else and get another quote from somebody. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Are we done with Repeater? Any questions?
I was going to suggest to John, if you're going to go with a second quote, contact all the towns around us. Find out who they use.
Most are either Wells or Radio North. I don't know what else is out there, but yeah, I can
find out who they use and then contact those people and get a second quote.
Now, what's the proper way to go forward with the second quote? Just explain to them what I explained to Wells and what we have and what we're doing, and I assume that's the way to do it, and let them come up with their own set of criteria as to what we need to make it functional.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you communicate to Wells to get the quote.
Okay. I can do that, unless somebody thinks otherwise.
Are we done with Peter?
Yep.
Municipal building access, ADA compliance.
That was me again. Just give me one second. So at town meeting, we had one individual get up and speak to being able to get into the town hall with relative ease in a wheelchair. If it had not been for two other citizens getting to town meeting a little bit late, that person may well have not gained access to the building as they were alone and in a wheelchair and had no way of getting anybody inside to get them in there. To me, this is a huge problem. As I looked around the town meeting after this person spoke, the vast majority of people in the meeting are, to put it politely, older people who, if they want to continue to go to town meeting, at some point in their life are likely to have mobility issues. And as a town, we have a responsibility to make it so relatively easily that they can get in the building. There's a whole ADA guidelines of what you have to have for access. And to be honest, we are only a complaint away from having to do it. Because all it takes is one person to make a complaint, a formal complaint to the ADA board. They're going to come out and visit, and they're going to go, you've got to fix this. That person got up speaking, got a standing, well, I don't know about standing, but many people in the audience clapped at that. And it just seems like we as the board have a duty to the citizens of this town to give them the access that they need, as well as, it's certainly seemed like they were all for doing that. However, it's not as simple as putting in a handicap ramp. You're going to have, an engineer come in and tell you where the best place to put it, and you can't, by ADA guidelines, you can't put the ramp out back of the building and make them come in the back. They've got to be able to access it as normally as an able-bodied person would be. We're also going to have to update the bathrooms. And all of this is going to require getting state permits. So you start updating the bathrooms, and they're going to tell you you're going to have to update the septic because it doesn't meet current standards. So by doing any of this, we're going to open a whole can of worms, and it's going to cost a lot of money. So I don't know where we want to go, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed and needs to move forward. And then the other part of why I called it, municipal building access is, we've got a parking lot out at the town office building here that's dirt. We've got a lip that, with some part back, could be fixed coming in. But this building is also not ADA compliant. And people come and go from this building all the time. I didn't look into it, but I was told that part of the plan for this building back in 2011 when it was redone was to pave the parking lot. It was brought up last year about paving it, as well as the year before, or maybe the year before that, and both times we have a drainage problem, so we shelved it. Well, if we've got a drainage problem, great, let's fix the drainage problem and then pave the parking lot, and then we can have safe access into it. And I think it just takes somebody that wants to take the initiative to move forward, but it's going to take spending money to figure out how much money we've got to spend to fix it. But we need to come up with a plan, figure out what it's going to cost, figure out a timeline, and get it done.
A lot of those issues were addressed with the scoping study. And there were many plans as to how to make it ADA compliant over there and here. And if you read that scoping study carefully, there's no real great solution there on any of them. But if you read the plan carefully, he came up with many, many options. And so we really should read the plan more carefully and determine which one of those options we might want to buy into and how far you want to go.
Yep.
I mean, I understand you want to pave the parking lot. But then there's a question in my mind is, if you pave the parking lot and it glasses over like this hard pack does, is it going to be more of a hazard that it is just hard pack, that at least glasses over with the bumps in it? And so you have to be willing to determine whether the fix is going to be better or worse than what you have at the moment.
The pavement can be salted, so it's clear.
Well, hopefully. But all it takes is an inch of snow, as we know, or a little bit of rain, and then it's a sheet of glass. But that being said, I think that the ADA compliance and getting people a good access over there, that still isn't going to take care of the bathrooms. That's one of the reasons we did the scoping study. It's going to take a significant amount of money to take care of
all. Right now you're fine until you get a complaint, but to do any work, you've got to have a state permit. And the state permit opens Pandora's box, because once you to get a permit, that triggers the entire ADA compliance process.
It's going to be
expensive. Then has to be compliant with ADA, and which means your bathrooms have to be ADA compliant, which means you have to redo your bathrooms. And anytime you get a permit like that, then all of your systems have to be up to date. And I understand that it's expensive, but whether it's done today, tomorrow, next year, 20 years from now, at some point it's going to have to be done. And somebody's going to have to pay for it at some point along the line. And it just seems like we at least need to come up with a plan and a timeline and how we're going to pay for it, how we're going to fund it. So that at least when people ask questions at town meeting about these buildings, that we can go, all right, here's our plan. This is what we've come up with. It doesn't mean it's not going to change before we actually get there and do it. But here are the estimates. Here's how we're going to pay for it, or how we propose we're going to pay for it. We're putting, $20,000, $30,000 into the brick building over here, which is necessary, needs to be done to preserve it, but
Well, we've done a lot at the town hall. I mean, they did the windows and everything, and that helped a lot, and the insulation. And this is only going to cost, I think that's $14,000, it's not $30,000. And so, and I agree, it's all got to be done. But the scoping study should have shown you some of what needed, how much it would cost. Yes.
I think Emily's comment is a good one to look at this long-range fix. However, I had a gentleman stay at my house last year, and I called the Barnard Inn, which is a public place. I have no idea if the bathroom was handicapped access. I doubt that. But they said that they're handicapped access, and I had no idea. I couldn't believe that it was with the steps there like it was. So I said, well, I just said, well, okay, we'll go to dinner at the Barnard Inn. And we got over there, and they had a ramp that they rolled out and put the ramp there. And from a short-term fix, you got the horseshoes over here. You could get a 12-foot ramp and hang it off the left-hand side of that porch there, and that would at least get them into the building and a grade that would be sufficient. And seeing that the town hall was only used for town meeting and the strawberry supper and the harvest supper and maybe a few other events, that might be something you could do short term to at least be able to get them in the building without quite the pitch. It worked at the Barnard Inn. Anyway.
Well, that is something that could absolutely be put out for those occasions. And if it were the right pitch and it were accessible so someone could drive there and get to it, you'd be good to go. And put it back in the horseshoes where you can't get anything else in them. And it's just something we'd have to do for those kinds of things.
It could work for a while.
But I think the point is well taken, but I don't think we're going to solve it tonight. Water quality study. Does anybody know why that is on?
That was Frank. There was an email about it, but I don't know enough to speak on it.
The Planning Commission got something on that at the meeting that we had on Monday, and it had to do with the school down at the Bonford School that drew a circle around the school that went over to the Harding Place and over to Chipper's, a large circle that was defined on the map, and they were just making a statement about the to make sure that nobody is polluting inside that radius there. And I could forward to you the letter I have it back at the house. That may be what Frank was talking about.
Okay. Select Board correspondence.
Actually, before we move on from the ADA compliance topic, I just want to bring up one thing. This is something that's come up multiple times in the past, and I'm glad John brought it up because we kind of punted on it every time it's come up before. And the Capital Planning Committee, we talked about it quite a bit back when we were looking at the town hall. So I would just add one more thing. Not to make it even worse than it already is, but if you start getting into ADA compliance and building code, I'm sure the state would also look at the egress out of the town hall and through the kitchen, that second exit going through the kitchen. And that too would come up as probably a major issue. So it is a Pandora's box for sure, which is why I think we haven't acted on it in the past. And so the bottom line is, once you start pulling on that string, we got to commit to it if we're going to do it. It's a big commitment.
Yeah, you're. I think that's why we're limited to 100 people in there, is because of the egress. Which, depending on where you had handicap access, that would certainly help with another potential access into the building for egress. So, but yes, and it is a Pandora's box because you start with one thing, and by the time you get done, you had to address it all.
Yeah, right. I'll leave it. There's more to be said, but I'll leave it for now.
I have the email from Frank about the water quality study, but all he said, sent it out, was I put it on here because he had sent the email. You all got it, so we could put it on the next agenda, and when he's here, we could all read the email, I guess.
Anything else? On water quality or municipal building access? Select board correspondence. I have none. Does anybody else have anything?
No, everything that I was already on the agenda. So.
Review of assignments. I'm going to speak with Laredo on his access and try and figure out a time. I think he's living up in Burlington, so you'd want to wait till the snow goes anyway to take a look at it.
To get a better idea of.
Because we can't tell anything with 3 feet of snow.
It's more than 3 feet over there.
Anyway, so we'll do that. You were going to check on a second repeater price, John?
Yes, but you were doing what? You were.
Maybe I'll call Phil Deckert on. An easement. Anything, Scott? Else?
No, I don't have anything.
Agenda items for next meeting. We'll put on the ones that that we did not take up today because Frank was missing, and then we'll go from whatever comes up. Do you have any other suggestions, Scott, that you want to see?
No, I don't.
John? Steve? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Just email them to me as you get them, and I will make up the agenda and post drafts, and we can go from there, I guess.
Sounds good. Move to close the meeting.
And move to close.
Second.
Scott? Vote?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Steve?
Aye.
Emily? Aye. Turn off Scott. Let's get out of here. It's late.
Have a good night, Scott.